Right. Good morning, everybody. You are tuned in to KWMR 90.5 in Point Reyes Station, 89.9 in Bolinas, and 92.3 in the San Geronimo Valley. And coming up is the West Marin Naturalist Hour with myself and Dallas. Seamus is out and about today. But first, KWMR is underwritten by Bear Valley Cottage in Olema. Information on this self-catering cottage available at bearvalley.com. And we have a little intro music we're going to play. And here we go. Wouldn't be the West Marin Naturalist Hour without one of us missing a button here or there. So some of us heard the music. Maybe some of you did. Anyways.
One of the lucky ones to hear.
Yeah. Anyways, moving right along. Before we get into our show here, Dallas, would you like to tell us a little bit about the weather and tides?
Yeah, absolutely. Looks like actually we have another nice week ahead of us. Looks like it should be nice and warm. Temperatures will be going into the lower 70s through the midweek, and then this weekend it looks like it'll be cooling down a bit. Temperatures, I believe, just barely getting into the 60s for the weekends. At nighttime, our lows will be in the low 50s, pretty much throughout the week. And it looks like if you're heading out on the water today, our tides are Marshall, California. Our next low tide is 1.2 feet at 11:45 a.m. And our next high tide is 5.1 feet at 6 p.m. Now I'll pass it off to Liz to introduce today's guest.
Excellent. Our guest today is Hannah Henley. She is an author and a dear friend of ours, naturalist guide, sea kayak guide, 100-ton boat captain. She's just all around amazing. New mama.
She was our stilt walker in the parade.
Yeah.
2 years in a row, dressed a bat ray and a leopard shark.
So we had Hannah on recently to talk about, or within the last few months, about her book, Under the Bridge, which was like a photographic coffee table book with Dave Evans.
If you haven't got it, it's time to get
it. It's so good. And yeah, so today we're going to have two things. since Seamus is out, we have a guest speaker. So Brian's going to be joining us on the show today and read some poetry a little later.
Brian Kirvin. Brian Kirvin's been with us before. Brian Kirvin's a fantastic poet as well. So Brian's our guest host. So thank you. Welcome, Brian.
Lucky to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and jumping back into, let's introduce the book that we're talking about today.
Yeah, the book today is Love and Other Fish, Essays on Wonder, Loss, and Transformation by the very talented Hannah Henley. It's a deep, beautiful, raw memoir that takes us all over the American West. And so we are thrilled to have you on the show today, Hannah. And I believe I have you tapped in. Hannah, are you with us? Really messing up these buttons. How about that one? How about this one? There you are. I heard a little giggle.
Good morning. Right.
Oh, boy. It's a morning indeed.
yeah, same. But here we are. Thanks for having me.
Totally welcome.
Morning, Hannah.
Hi there. Hi, Brian. Excited to get to chat with you as well.
Excellent. Yeah, I was texting with you yesterday. We picked up a copy from Point Reyes Books here in town. So,
yeah, what a big year. Two books published in 1 year. I mean, like, we're always so proud of you, Hannah, but, like, this year we're tooting your horn super loud. So.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been big. It feels like I kind of feel like I gave birth to triplets this year. I had the bird book come out.
Totally.
And I just gave birth to a human baby a couple months ago, and now this book is hitting the shelves, so I'm ready to take a little rest for a while.
Well, we feel maybe honored to have you this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So what inspired you to write Love and Other Fish?
Yeah, you know, this book was kind of the culmination of the time that I spent earning my MFA in creative writing. I had worked for years as a wilderness guide and decided that I needed an excuse to to come inland and settle down for a little while and to take a break from seasonal work. And the best excuse I could think of was to go back to school for a little while. So I moved to Tucson, Arizona, and signed up for this really incredible little creative writing program at University of Arizona. And a lot of folks arrived in this program already sort of knowing what they wanted their big book to be about, and I kind of didn't. because, you know, I've just spent my life falling in love with so many different kinds of things and places, and it took some thought to settle on a vision for my final thesis for this program. And the more I sat down and thought about my life traveling all over the American West and all of the different sorts of work I've had and educational experiences I've had, the thing that kept rising to the surface was so many of my life stories are woven together with fish stories and places where fish live. I worked on boats for many years, and I studied biology, and fish just kept appearing at the edges of my stories. And it was sort of an act of creative curiosity to commit to writing my entire thesis with fish as the common thread. And that's how this book was born.
That's beautiful. It's more than just a thesis. I feel like it's a memoir of a bit of your life thus far. For listeners who haven't read it yet, what is it about in your words?
Yeah. Well, the book is kind of, it's a collection of essays, which means that each essay sort of tells a different standalone story.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to think about this also when the book came up to be published, and I needed to put together, you know, blurbs and info about it. And it's hard to kind of to capture the sense of each of these essays under one uniting easy descriptor. But I'd say, you know, so many of these essays are about my life stories, my adventures working as a wilderness guide, and also the really sort of hard life stories that have followed me through my early adulthood, different kinds of heartbreak and loss and silly mistakes and adventures. And equally, it's also a book about fish biology and anatomy, mm-hmm. and natural history, right? Because those are my big loves, is digging into the science of things. Both of those levels of storytelling kind of weave together and draw meaning out for each other. So I guess really, if I had to describe really what's at the heart of this book, it's a book about being human,
mm-hmm.
With fish as the teachers for understanding what it really means to be human.
You did such a good job, like, weaving that together. Like,
way to make fish sexy.
And how long did the project take, you know, like, when you first, like, started coming up with the idea to, like, getting it all finished and on paper?
Yeah, a lot of these essays were sort of turbocharged in the final year of my MFA degree, where I really had to buckle down, and I was like, oh my God, I need to write a book length thing. and actually that's often when I write best, is when my whole life is just like charged with a little bit of adrenaline and the words just start flowing. And so I think maybe I needed that pressure of a program to just push me to put those words on the page. And it was my last year in grad school was 2020.
Plenty of pressure.
Yeah, lots of pressure. The world was falling apart. No one knew what was happening. I actually ended up defending my thesis over Zoom before Zoom was like a thing, mm-hmm. you know? And so some of that is present in the book too, just the sense of loss and fear as you know, all the unknowns started looming with the rise of the pandemic. And the essays came together pretty quickly. But it took a long time for the book itself to really be born. I wrapped up this collection and sort of tucked it away. And my life really changed a lot during the pandemic. Obviously, wilderness guiding kind of went on hold for a while. And I found myself back in California where I'd grown up and pursuing different kinds of work. And I just sort of, the essays sat in a drawer for some time. And I finally decided that it was worth trying to put it out in the world. And so I submitted it for the River Teeth Book Prize, which is an annual award that's given to a work of kind of environmental literature. And sort of forgot that I'd submitted it until I heard back from them a year later, letting me know that I'd won this prize, which cool. was thrilling and kind of confusing and exciting.
That thing.
Right. I'd forgotten about the book a little and sort of didn't expect much of it. It's kind of a more vulnerable book than a lot of my other writing. Mm-hmm. So I think part of me was just, gosh, maybe a little hesitant to let it be in the world. And so I had to grapple with that too when I found out it had won this prize. And part of the award is publication with University of New Mexico Press, which is just an extraordinary little book press in New Mexico. And the publication process, once the book was chosen for the prize, took a couple of years. So that part has been sort of slow-moving gears, a long gestation, I guess, if we're comparing this to a birth. But yeah, that's the timeline for it. It's exciting to finally see it on shelves now. Someone sent me a picture of it in Wayfinder Books, the sister store to Point Reyes books. And it was face out on one of the shelves. And it was just so thrilling to know that it's alive and kind of living its own life now out there.
Yeah, right. We got ours at Point Reyes books, and it was right up front, and I was so excited to see your stuff up there. And you know, the book was still out there as well, so I'm just like, you're taking over.
That's exciting. The empire is growing.
So, speaking of the book being out, because it was tucked away and just what you were describing for it, the cover, I know the drawings on the inside, those are yours, yes?
Yeah, that's right.
And did you do the cover as well?
I did the cover too.
Wow.
With the caveat that I'm really not an artist, I'm not a visual artist in that way. But I had one essay in the book that's written kind of like a field science survey.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. Of different species of fish. And I was like, God, I need pictures of these fish for this particular format of essay. So why don't I just draw fish for the whole book? and it was really joyful. It was a much more freeing approach to art. You know, like I think sometimes I start taking my writing too seriously. Mm. So it was fun just to doodle. And I was so thrilled that they let me illustrate my own cover, which they had told me isn't something they usually let authors do. But they saw some of my drawings and were willing to give me a chance. And it felt really important to be able to capture sort of like the heart of the book in a way that felt true to me. I had seen some other illustrations that the publisher was floating around as possible covers. And I was like, gosh, you know, I really think that I'm the best person to to capture the feeling of this book, which I hope, I'm sure different people feel different things when they look at the cover. But to me, it's a book about like, just these extraordinary human depths that I've experienced as a woman in the world. And also, of course, like the wilderness of the sea itself and those depths. And And there's also like a little bit of levity and whimsy in the book. You'll see like the cover has like a cute little pink moray eel on it. and so I hope the cover sort of captures what my voice sounds like on a page too.
Very much. I when I looked at it, I thought, oh man, the artist did such a good job of capturing it. So now that I know that you're the artist, I'm like, of course you did.
That's right.
You nailed it.
Thanks, Dallas. It was fun to do. Yeah, maybe my next book will be a graphic novel. Yeah,
I actually thought about that with some of what I was reading. I was like, oh, this would be great.
For little ones.
Yeah.
Wow, cool. Yeah. I love that idea.
And then also back to the timing of it, you know, as many things in life, all this groundwork is laid and things take time. And so for it coming out now, I just thought, especially, you know, like I said, I was flipping through it last night and tapping into some of those chapters. It's like, yeah. Where you are now in your life versus where some of these stories happened, it feels like this big transition, right? And it's sort of like,
totally.
I don't know, I feel like this book kind of wraps up that era for you, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's so fascinating, you know, like we were talking about the timeline and how once this book was selected for this prize, it took a while for it to hit the shelves. And in that time, life has changed so much, mm-hmm. you know, like I have found love and probably yeah. some other fish too.
A few fish not mentioned.
A few fish not mentioned. Plenty of room for a sequel now, but in a lot of ways. Yeah, this feels sort of like an artifact of the past mm-hmm. to some degree. You know, like I have essays in this book about fossils and deep time, and it sort of feels like tapping into the deep time of my own earlier life and career. And there are a lot of totally vulnerable stories in this book, not just about loss and heartbreak, but about my own mistakes in love and in searching for love. I feel like that story for me has changed a lot in recent years as I've become grounded in really true feeling love for myself. Mm-hmm. And in some ways it feels a little scary putting these stories out in the world now.
Gosh, I bet, yeah.
I've changed, but this book sort of is a fossil mm-hmm. of the past and is unchangeable. And I think that's also a really beautiful thing to be able to release these stories about other chapters in my life and let them keep swimming out in the world and finding the people that are the right readers for them. And I'm over here kind of collecting material for whatever the next round of stories might be, which might look really different from this one.
And, you know, I thank you for being so personal in all your writing. You know, like as a friend of yours, we got a chance to even to know you even further and reading this book. And it's really,
yeah.
really amazing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, you both have read a lot of my other work too, mm-hmm. most of which is more firmly rooted in kind of natural history storytelling, right? Which has often been my comfort zone. And it's a kind of writing I really love to do. I think it's important in this world for science writers to really help people feel all of the wonder and complexity of the natural world. And often in those stories, I appear maybe right at the edges as sort of an observer sharing my perspective on the natural world or as a character of a sort, sort of leading interviews with scientists, but not at the center. And this was something that I was really challenged in when I went to grad school, as I would bring these stories to the table. And inevitably, every time my cohort read these stories, they'd say, "Hannah, this is great, but it's about trees, or it's about, you know, like rocks. And this one paragraph about you is what we want to know more about." And so they'd bully me into, you know, revising these essays so that more of my story was at the heart. And that was a big act of bravery for me in a lot of these pieces. you know, because initially I would fight back and say, yeah, but like the trees are the main characters in this story. Like, why, why would you care about me when there are these like huge, wondrous natural processes at work in the world? And so I think this book is evidence of my own like growth and journey toward being more open and vulnerable and trusting that my own story is worth reading too. So thank you for reading it and letting me be vulnerable on the page. I feel like a book doesn't really exist until it has readers. So, thanks for holding that.
Of course. And did it? And I'm assuming that it changed quite a little bit then when you first started writing it to like towards the end essays. Because is there 18? Is that right? Is that how many essays?
I think that's right. Somewhere in that range. Yeah, lots of essays. I mean, most of them were written over a short period of time, and I think I didn't really even have quite a vision for what the whole shape of the book would be. I remember I had a high school teacher once who said something like, "How do I know what I think till I see what I write?" And that kind of felt like my experience with this book too, is, you know, obviously I have all of these life stories that I've been building up and trying to figure out how fish might play a role in each of them. But it wasn't until I started just like letting the words flow that I kind of began to understand the bigger shape of the book. And so a lot of these stories were crafted, you know, like late at night in like one big sweep where like the essay would just like emerge. But it was really interesting returning to the collection after the manuscript won this prize. And I was like, oh gosh, I have the opportunity now to go back and edit, from this place I am in now in my life. And I did my best not to change too many of those stories, even though my perspective as a narrator may have changed since then. But it was a cool opportunity. There's one essay in the book called Lazarus in the Desert that I wrote with a little more of my current perspective on the world as a way to sort of bring it all together a little bit. And I think my voice in that essay has totally changed over the time since this book was first written. I don't know if that answers that question, but
that's so interesting that you say that, because I totally noticed a little bit of a shift in some of the other essays with that one.
Yeah, that's great. I've gone past and look at my past writings in my 20s and been like, wow, that's very different than what I think now, you know. And so to have it published, you know, it's a whole other, you know, act of vulnerability. So thank you for letting us read that.
Ah, totally. Yeah. I was brainstorming if I should have, you know, like a book launch party for this or something. And if I were to kind of celebrate the launch, it might be just inviting all of my community to show up and read their own totally embarrassing, vulnerable stories out loud as an act of solidarity.
Totally.
I love that. Let's do that.
Okay. The plan.
That's great.
I'm looking forward to reading this book, yeah. Hannah, and just interested to see how you cobbled it together. I'm kind of have one of similar eclectic interests of wandering in the wild for many years and
yes.
motorcycle trips, but but the way that you bring the personal in is, I'll be interested to see how you did that. Because that is something that challenges me about publishing anything.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
makes me think of the poet also, David White, who was a natural history guy, biologist, and then he realized that he couldn't leave the eye out of his writing.
Mm. Yes. Yes. Gosh, I love him. I actually didn't realize that was David White's background, but that makes sense why I love him so much. And it's totally an act of courage to bring the eye closer to the center of a piece, you know, especially for those of us who are inclined to adventure and to look outward into the world and find inspiration outside of ourselves. But it's brave and I think really important. You know,
where does the human fit in? Yeah,
exactly. We're part of this big world too, and I think other human readers find a lot more footing in a poem or an essay where there's also kind of a human level experience being shared, and in turn sharing the human kind of opens a more accessible door for appreciating the non-human lives and landscapes that might really be secretly at the heart of that piece, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of an invitation to connect.
Connection, yes.
Oh. Yeah, totally.
I was kind of reading through, reminding myself of some of these essays here, you know, just some of the quick ones, you know, it's one about your dad being, like, in the aquarium during the earthquake. It's like, wild.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
It's like so quick. I'm just like, all your stories are all, they're so phenomenal.
You pick up this book, if just like, if you flip through it, because like you said, there are a series of essays, so you can read any of them independently. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you just picked her and you're like, oh my God. And then what happened? And what? What?
It's totally just a mosaic of my crazy life. But with totally, yeah, like a lot of recognizable roots in this place. I know you guys had asked me ahead of time, like, gosh, this takes place all over the place. But like, what? where can we find familiar places to us in the book? And yeah,
romping, I mean, like, naked in the nettles is where in this book.
Exactly. Yeah, I worked out in Point Reyes when I was a youth and spent some time on naked night hikes out among the buckeyes and the nettles, and I think that's definitely in the book.
More enticing publicity for this book.
Yes, yes.
Invigorating.
There's a whole section about stripping down.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Not, you know, no,
metaphorically. Yeah.
Nudity.
No, no. It's, yeah.
But, yeah, that would make for a more exciting graphic novel, definitely.
Just planting the seeds here. We're just planting the seeds.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of local subtext in the book. You know, I grew up out here, and I think Limantour, maybe not by name, but by association, makes it into the book, if you know where to look, and Salt Point to the north. And yeah, Liz, like you were saying, my dad was working at the Steinhardt Aquarium, which is now Cal Academy, I guess, during the Loma Prieta earthquake, and he was under the shark tanks when the ground started shaking, and just lots of crazy local fish stories woven in.
Right. Well, and your drawing of the leopard shark was fantastic.
Thank you.
We're just starting to see him in the bay, so I was like, oh, yay.
Yay, they're coming. I was a little nervous as I was drawing these fish. I was like, oh, God, people who know fish are going to be looking at these illustrations and questioning my doodling.
It's
choices.
Nice. Yeah, doodling is important. You know, it's been fun to get your own creative, you know, influence in on that.
Looks pretty solid to
me. I could tell right away.
Recognizable enough, yeah. Totally. Doodling is kind of just an exercise in looking closely, right, and trying to capture not just, like, the literal shape of what you're trying to depict, but maybe also a little bit of the feel of it, too. Mm. So hopefully the leopard shark feels, feels leopard sharky. Mm-hmm.
Well, we got a few more questions, but it is 9:30. We got to take a quick little break. I'm not sure if we're gonna get the music working, but
I'm
gonna
try.
You got this, Liz. I believe in you.
Quick little station.
I've been studying the buttons this whole interview. Yeah, so if you are just tuning in, you're listening to the Westmoreland Naturalist Hour, and our guest today is Hannah Henley. Love and Other Fish is her newest book out, Essays on Wonder, Loss, and Transformation. And you are tuned in to 90.5 in Point Reyes Station, 89.9 Bolinas, and 92.3 in the San Geronimo Valley. And KWMR is underwritten by Gallery Route 1, a nonprofit contemporary art gallery in Point Reyes Station, offering educational outreach programs, proud to nurture and promote emerging and established artists, and to support KWMR. Online at galleryroute1.org. And this was a song request by Brian. I might not have got the right version, but I'm going to see if we'll get this to play.
All right.
This one?
Yeah. Let's see if we can get that working.
So I hear it.
the hand that lit the dark light. I was on the outside. I was waiting for a sign. I set a course for a hidden island that lay beyond the deceiving silence. I was on the dark side. I was sailing towards the light. I made my way through a sea of silence, a pirate's life full of worthless diamonds. Sign that drew me close, jealous howling wind. Memory of the safe shoreline, never find again. I was on the outside, I was waiting for the right. I fought my way through a sea of violence, but you never heard me scream in silence. I was on the dark side, I was sailing through the night. I'm playing cards at the devil's table. I lost my hand to a headless table. Every time I hear the music when the ocean breathes, make me wish that I could build a bridge across the sea. The secrets of the moonlight will carry me where the sun meets the water and the sky breaks free. Is that where you be?
Are back. We are the Westmoreland Naturalist Hour, and we are talking with Hannah Henley and her book Love and Other Fish. And I'm gonna turn her up now. Welcome back, Hannah.
Hi, thanks, Liz.
I was just gonna say, introduce that song we're listening to. That was Sea Dreamer. That was by Brian.
Karsh Kale and Sting collaboration.
Oh, beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Totally. Could you hear it over there, Hannah?
No, I'm going to look it up now, but I know the song.
All right.
Yeah, so as we were getting ready to come back into this segment, we wanted to ask, you know, were there any chapters, whether when you were writing or as you were revising, that were especially difficult? There's a lot of heartbreak in this book, or especially joyful for you to write?
Gosh, yeah, you know, so much of this was difficult, right? Like we were saying earlier, just the act of telling vulnerable personal stories was a stretch and a beautiful challenge, you know, and something that I feel good about now that I see it all on the page.
Without spoilers, you know, we don't want to.
I'd say, you know, all of the essays were difficult in a really rewarding feeling way. I feel like for me as a writer, often putting words down on the page is a way to understand the shape of my own feelings about the experiences I'm writing about. And sometimes I don't even know exactly what I feel until it's there and I can start to like tease it out and see what it looks like. And so difficult, but also like you might say therapeutic to tell these hard stories. And I think that there was a lot of joy in writing them too. Especially, you know, like I'm, as you know, a total natural history nerd too. And so, it's just so much fun, as an essayist, to, come across just amazing little fish fact nuggets that end up being the most stunning metaphor for whatever story I'm trying to tell about myself. And that was a really fun research process for me, and brought a lot of joy and balance to sort of the more raw edge of it. And I think it was also joyful, too, to return to this collection and to write looking backwards on all the stories in that other essay I mentioned earlier, The Lazarus in the Desert, where I had the opportunity to revisit all of the old stories of loss and mistakes and hurt and sort of balance those out with a broader perspective. Hopefully the essays will be hard and joyful both for readers to read too. I hope that when people sit down to read it, they are willing to feel open and to shed a tear if they need to, and also that they can look beyond the dark parts and find the whimsy and the wonder. I think they're both present on the page and in my writing experience too.
Wow. I'm just so happy for you.
Yeah.
This is such a, again, just like this raw, beautiful book that I can't wait to sit down with like time for. You were talking about the little fun little fish factoids. What was your favorite little fish factoid?
Oh gosh. Geez. Like everything in the book is just so fun and nerdy. I think something that I, maybe not my all-time favorite fish factoid, but one that feels really pertinent right now is just thinking about the ways that we as humans are just totally rooted in the sea. And I remember this is something I learned when I was an undergrad at Harvard and taking evolutionary biology classes, and discovering that fish are often used in like medical classes because they're so similar to humans. And we as humans, when we're forming in the womb, sort of rapid fire undergo all of the different stages of like evolution that that we went through to become a species. So there's a point in the womb when we have not functional, but when we have kind of gill arches on our necks that reflect the time in our evolutionary history when we were fish. I think having a fresh baby of my own now in the world, that's like a really poignant fish fact, just to think that my little baby had gills at one point and was swimming in like the little miniature ocean of my own body. And it's just, I think that is such a great metaphor for this book too, to think that, yes, there are these natural history stories about fish and all of their cool anatomy. But really the stories about fish are stories about humans and vice versa. And it's maybe not even fair to think of them as separate threads. Mm-hmm. But just all parts of the same tapestry. And yeah, that fish are just really cool. You'll have to read the book to learn more nuggets. But
do you have a small passage you'd be willing to read by any chance?
This book has, there are some kind of long braided essays in the book and then a handful of much shorter little kind of essay bites. Maybe I'll read you an essay bite.
I love bites.
Yeah, me too. Actually, this was fun. You know, like I came into the project really loving all of these complex, like multi-strand essay braids. And by the end of the project, I was just totally loving the succinctness of just like one big breath of an essay that you can read in one little gulp. So I will read, maybe I'll read a kind of sad one. Might as well. We've been talking about all of the darkness in this.
There is a lot of light too.
There's so much light, but we've been so cryptic about it without any details. Maybe I'll just read one. One ever present element in these stories is the loss of my dad, who passed away when I was 19 in a scuba diving accident. So among the fish. And the story is about that. It's called Witnesses. High near the surface, top smelt, with tiny forked teeth, with bodies swirling against silver bodies in a shifty murmuration. And among the swishing blades of seaweed, giant kelp fish, pulsing different colors like living mood rings. And cabazone, froggy-mouthed, fins like ribbed corduroy, eggs that are gelatinous, bubble wrap plump. A single bite can kill a man. Blue-banded gobies with highlighter bright bodies hanging upside down from rocky ledges like lanterns. Black rockfish and blue rockfish and olive rockfish and kelp rockfish. Garibaldi, cheddar orange. Morays with their unhinged snaggletooth mouths open in a grin or in a grimace, though really they're just trying to breathe. And weren't you too? All these watched as your diving companions surfaced, as you did not, as your body sifted through the fog of plankton, through rubbery curtains of kelp. Eyes among seaweed, eyes among the rocks. And when night arrived, bat rays winged over you, their sets of teeth generating, regenerating inside their mouths like endless necklaces of pearls. Close by in the kelp forest, horn sharks squeezed out dark, spiral-shaped egg cases that glowed under the strobing searchlights, the unborn bodies inside them backlit and pumping slowly in silhouette, the way that a heart pumps. Splotchy swell sharks with eyes like oil slicks glanced at you, glided past. Your body knocked and settled in the deep current, plowing patterns into the sand. Helicopters sent light swimming through the tops of waves. And when you'd been dragged up, waterlogged, unbreathing, when you and your gear had been cut open like fruit, though no bad seeds could be found, when they brought you, stiff, back to our hometown crematorium in the brittle height of July, I could not bear to look. Still, by the time the rescue divers found you, 1,000 other eyes had witnessed your cool and emptying body. A lidless fish has no choice but to see, to see, to see.
Witness, that's the title of that one?
Yeah. Which was just a beautiful exercise in like learning about all of the incredible kelp forest fish that are out there. That's where my dad's body was found. And trying to capture the beauty and the strangeness of mm-hmm. all of the other non-human witnesses that would have seen him before he was found by the rescue divers.
I'm glad he was found.
Me too. Yeah. Yeah, it was important full circle. And mm-hmm. We had the opportunity to then return his ashes to the watery places that he loved, mm-hmm. including the ocean and river streams and lots of places where, I guess, even more fish got to hang out with him mm-hmm. in the afterlife. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah. Maybe that one was a little too dark for the radio show. I don't know.
No. It's okay. No, it's real.
Absolutely not.
And, you know, I think it's just an example of how uncomfortable we are as a society in general that, you know, we all sit here and don't have many words for that because it was just, you know, such a beautiful moment for you to share with us. And I'm sure it doesn't get any easier even as the years go by. So.
No. Yeah. That's how grief works, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't wane. They're just other things that start occupying the space alongside it. But the hope in a book like this is that other people can maybe see themselves in it too and know that they're not alone. And
of course, yeah.
Yeah. I'm happy to share something a little lighter from the book too. I don't know what our time frame looks like.
Yeah. We could have a pick me up.
A little pick me up. Cool. I will, this is another just little bite, but this is about a cute little favorite fish of mine. And the essay is called Bird Wrasse. Bird wrasses, Gomphosis varius, are perfectly common. They wander the waters of the Indo-Pacific, from the warm eastern edge of the Indian Ocean to the flung crumbs of Hawaii's archipelago. They spend their days solitary, snooping among coral for small, meaty things. Their snouts are long like bird beaks, which allows them access into tight crevices and inviting nooks where their food nestles. By night, they tuck themselves into snug spots in rock or coral, and they snooze. The males are a deep and brilliant green, like emeralds, with a bright flash of lime at the shoulder and faces as blue as if they'd just plunged headfirst into blueberry pie. The females are drab. They sell for half the price of their male counterparts on online aquarium stores peddling wild fish. Their bellies are pearly white and speckled with tiny black spots that darken at mid-body so that their rear halves are nearly all black. But unlike the males, their beaky snouts are bright orange, making the female the birdier of the two sexes, indisputably. My fellow snorkeling guide rolls his eyes at me when I go following a bird wrasse low among the corals. I hold my breath and trail her like a lost soul follows swamp lights. He shakes his head when I spring to the surface, exclaiming my discovery. He is looking for ribbon-soft eels, for quiet sharks under ledges, for the lao willy willy nuku nuku oi oi ele ele, the long-nosed butterfly fish that shows up all black instead of its usual yellow in just a few places along the Kona coast. He likes the rare things, the fierce ones. But I am undeterred by his indifference. The bird wrasses are, to me, numinous. If kept in lidless tanks, they'll fly right out toward freedom with swift bird-like flaps of their fins. Nobody knows how long they can live. They are unholdable, unmeasurable. And when no males are present, a female might undergo an extraordinary transformation. Enzymes sparkle awake inside her body. Her ovaries degenerate and crypts form where eggs used to be. She produces sperm, which moves through her oviducts, travels down passageways that are not wholly male, but no longer female either. She loses her orange beak, her speckled skin, and changed, brilliant, unbeholden to her past, unassumingly miraculous. She wings greenly away into some unimagined new life. Which I guess is another fun fish nugget, is that female wrasse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just become male sometimes if their environment invites it.
There's a lot of that in the ocean. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of gender fluidity, I guess.
Which makes sense.
It's natural. In a fluid place. It's natural. That's right, folks. Get used to it.
You heard it here.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Your book is amazing. It's, you know, my bookshelf is being filled up right now with Hannah Hindley.
Yeah. Hopefully more to come.
Yeah. So, I mean, for folks, if you get a chance to, it's Love and Other Fish. It's Essays on Wonder, Loss, and Transformation by our good friend Hannah Hindley. You can get it at all your local bookstores, I believe, in
Wayfinder, Point Reyes Books.
Yeah, get it local if you can.
That's right. Yeah, go support your local bookstores.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for for coming in on and joining us this morning, Hannah.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course, are you kidding me?
Yeah, what a joy always to get to chat with you guys.
So excited. and actually, to roll out here, we actually...
we have another poet in the mix.
We do. Yay. We had allocated a lot more time, but we just all of a sudden looked at the clock and realized, holy cow, it's already 9:52. We're like having to steamroll here. Would you have any time here? We have till, I think, right till 10 o'clock here.
I'll take my 9 minutes, yeah.
Let's do it. I'll be so excited to have it.
I mean, I don't know quite how to follow that.
Well, first I want to start with a little intro, too, about you, because, you know, this is the third time we've had you on here on our show, and you also used to be a programmer out here at KWMR on multiple shows. Is that correct?
It morphed a bit.
Okay, yeah.
let's see. Swerving Sounds.
Right.
Swerving with Curvin.
That's, yeah, I remember Swerving with Curvin.
Learning Curvin after I needed to stop swerving so much.
Awesome. And you're the last time we had you on, you had a really fantastic poem about Tomales Bay and bioluminescence, actually, that sticks with me every time we go out and I go paddle at nighttime, which is, we're in the season, you know, it's always in my brain.
Oh, well, you're not going to like the poem I have for you then. Is Hannah still here with us?
I believe we do.
Excited to hear.
Yes, totally.
Well, you guys, you can eviscerate me for any scientific inaccuracy here, but it's called The Drift. Ever since I moved off the tide zone, which seems so pristine in my newcomer naivete, I lament the lessening clarity of shore waters of Tomales Bay. Worldwide waters, no longer as crystalline as you might see in the magazines. The Caribbean, the Philippines, Sea of Cortez, Cook's Bay, all of these, I can see, are seasonal. Indeed, shorelines be turbulent. It's cafe con leche in the wet season. But that milky cast upon this bay's inshore waters when snorkeling in the dry season, where eelgrass has flourished and cleansed, extends year-round now. Bioluminescent glow offers a soothing surface show, but marks the water's overall warming, yielding less biodiversity, upwelling, oxygen, scant shellfish meat, shells without enough calcium carbonate for the animals to grow themselves. Yeah, it's called ocean acidification. What was an alternating cycle of nutrient riches, a healthy fertilization, is now compromised by species loss. Those stirring smelt, anchovy, sardine, and herring banquets for harbor seals, pelicans, cormorants, and as well as the production of phytoplankton, the foundation of the food chain, come fewer and further in between in an otherwise stagnant cesspool of decayed nitrogen sea lettuce soup. Fit only for the hardiest of adapters, green crab, purple urchin, turban snails, sea cockroaches, all mill about a ghostly aquatic scene, a pallor cast. No more blue lagoon, no youthful marine Eden along the Mediterranean, no big blue sanctuary for the sea dreamer. Is it more a result of my worn down lenses? It's unclear. Like my insides and innermost emotions are also muddled from swimming in climate-changed waters. Gone the illusion that Tomales Bay exists in a vacuum. I don't have the data. It's a feel and one of loss. You say I'm seeing a sea half empty? I say I'm seeing the whole world's oceans as murky. where once swimming in salt water scoured me clean. No more saline clarity, it seems. I cry salt tears from my microplastics. Polyethylene can help make a beauty queen while burning away the gut linings of a sturgeon. All of the sea's organisms will need a surgeon to remove what's unclean and a regrowth of what's needed so that one day all offspring can look clearly through her again and dream. I have a lighter one to end on.
No, I actually, you know,
it's good to hit the heavy stuff. It's important.
On a day talking about wonder, loss, and transformation, you know, it's actually, I think it's not a bad, you know, follow up. And as you say, it's like it's a feeling, you know, and things do change. You know?
I don't want to not mention it. I'm grateful for the clear seas that I lived over in Pamalas Bay.
Totally. But as someone who does the water quality testing, I know that we're getting cleaner. So.
Oh, great.
So scientifically, I can tell you, feeling is one thing, but...
Okay, cool. Personally, probably because I moved off of the bay,
right, totally.
That I don't see the clarity as much.
No. And we still have two more minutes. We can be, if you got
I have one that I wrote a couple summers ago when I called in to talk to you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I was staying in Coronado.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called San Diego Bay Scan, Coronado, California, 7/31/24. Mm-hmm. Across swishing surface waters, bodies on board undulate. So many bodies with wings, fins, legs, and skegs in motion or stationed up and down the bay. The eelgrass hands of this Qigong practitioner sway back and forth with the waves. Bat rays flap through thin young eelgrass shallows spread throughout the edges of the bay. Kayaks and paddleboards glide along the shorelines of the bay. Skates spread all along soft sandy bottoms of arcing coastline of the bay. Humans on swim boards use only arms to move about the bay. Dolphins luxuriate on their way through the heart of the bay. Boats ferry passengers all day on quick crossings of the bay. Naval ships docked along the bay teeter lightly in their wake. Jets skim below the skyline of the pretty city across the bay. Pelicans glide in formation, catching drafts where sky meets bay. Jet skis zoom and hydroplane, inflatables all the way up and down the bay, while black skimmers graze surface waters, feeling for their prey. Mm-hmm. So the juxtaposition of human in a place where I was amazed how clear the water was. I was able to get in every day and snorkel, mm-hmm. and was jazzed by that, because on the other side, on the ocean side, the Tijuana effluent was prohibiting swimming.
Oh.
But I came across a bottle in the tide zone, and I was picking up trash a lot during those days because people come have their little picnics, mm-hmm. and then leave a gift. And the bottle started moving, and I... you can probably guess which creature might be involved here. So I was just